What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back, everybody. And I think, Amy, we're going to be getting into the final stuff about identity, and we're going to be talking about style guides today. And next week, we're queuing up content. Is that right?
Yep. We're going to have a really good discussion about content, and after that, our promised deep dive into the individual archetypes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So that'll take, 12, if my count is correct, 12
right.
Sub-major archetypes. We'll be spending 12 individual weeks going over each of them.
Yep.
But today, we're talking about style guides. So what is a style guide? It's it's a document that very few companies I have found have them, and it's amazing. I'd say half to two-thirds don't even know what a style guide is. So if you think about the process of how creative things evolve inside of a company, their website, their marketing brochures, how is it possible that some companies just have this really tight visual presentation, and they must have all kinds of vendors, you know, print vendors and web designers and illustrators and animators and videographers. And all those people seem to be really in sync with each other. And it's not magic, and it's not, you know, some miraculous thing that they're doing that you're unaware of. It's usually a style guide. And so a style guide is a document that presents all of the rules that everybody has to follow, the visual treatments and how things get presented, right?
Right. So now that you know what a style guide is, why should you have one? Kevin kind of touched on that. It's kind of like the Bible of your company for how to use all of the things that have to do with your identity and how not to use them. You should just literally be able to hand this document to the creative vendors that you use, new employees that you hire, people like that, so they can all understand what your brand is and how you're using the different components of your identity. Similar to a business plan, and just as important, and it's something that you're going to be referring back to all the time. And, you know, nobody likes to repeat themselves and say the same story over and over again. So if you have this tool that just outlines everything, you can just hand it to people and you don't even have to explain it.
So do you think all companies have to have them?
I would say so, all companies, because you should be doing your marketing and branding, and
right.
who wants to keep repeating themselves, right?
Right, and I think there's, if you look at a formal, well-prepared style guide for, let's say, a medium or large company, and these things evolve over time. They're a fluid document. They're not just a static thing, create it once and sit it on a shelf ready to hand it out. It's constantly being, you know, dog-eared and referred to, and, you know, people add things and take things out. So it's an evolving document, but if it's done right, it doesn't have to be this. I expect that it would be different from one company to the next, where some people might have a 40 or 50 page style guide. Other people a small company might only have a 2 or 3 page style guide.
Right.
Yeah,
there's no hard and fast rules. However, there are some very distinct parts that you need to include to have a complete style guide. So, Kevin, why don't you tell us about some of those parts that you need to make sure your style guide has?
Yeah, well, I think it's the one that when you look at a style guide, the very first thing that you should see is an introduction from the CEO, the president. And when you look at this superficially, from an outsider's perspective, you think, oh, yeah, that's nice. It's just a letter from the president. There's a letter from the CEO introducing this concept. Well, it's way more important than that. It's buy-in from that person. If the idea of how your style, how your brand gets presented to the world, your identity gets presented to the world, if it's not from the top down, then you get a lot of conflicting kind of politics inside the company where some people say, we really don't need to follow that. That's just going to be too hard for this one piece. And then your brand starts to spin out of control and gets off the rails. So getting buy-in from the president CEO is super important. And then as you go through the next couple of chapters, we think, this is not going to be a surprise to anybody, that the next most important thing is defining your brand strategy, in particular, define the archetype. Because if a creative vendor reads that archetype section and they, you know, let's say you're talking about the lover archetype and they need to exude passion. Well, once they have that concept in mind and then they start reading all the other sections, let's say they're looking at the section on font faces or color. Well, if you're going to try to exude passion throughout this new style, you're going to keep in mind those fonts that exude passion and those colors that exude passion. So it's really super important there. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I agree. And, you know, just like we've talked before and we'll talk about in the future, once you have that archetype defined, it just makes branding and your message and everything that much more clear and easy to understand. And so by defining your archetype right up front in the beginning of the style guide, it makes everything else after that make sense and kind of fall into place for the reader or the person who's just discovering your brand for the first time.
Right. Here's another kind of idea. You can use your style guide and your archetype to figure out which creative vendors are a good fit for you and your company. Let's say, for example, you hand the style guide to a brand new signage person who's, you know, create a big sign for the front of your company. And it's not just the logo, it's a whole presentation. And their drafts of what they do, they clearly didn't read the style guide, they didn't get the concept of your lover archetype passion. They were just kind of doing things. It was pretty for sure, but it just didn't fit. Well, if that person can't adapt to your strategy, to your archetype, and to your style guide, well, maybe they're not a good fit for you and your company. And I've seen this over and over and over again where people figure it out after they have the right tools, but before that, all they were concerned about were getting pretty pictures. So it's a good business strategy as well. So let's talk about the different sections of the style guide. Now we're going to start getting into the details, really. So one of the more important sections is how do you handle color? If you're going to have a narrow color palette or a wide color palette, what kinds of colors do we pick? Typical kinds of sections might be if you're going to be doing offset press printing, you might need to pick Pantone colors. If you're going to do four-color process printing, you know, that's probably going to be a CMYK printing, defining the different kinds of ratios of ink colors. If it's digital, you're going to be using RGB colors. If it's for the web, you might use hexadecimal colors. And I'm getting into a lot of technical stuff here, but certainly every creative person who needs to understand how to use color for your brand needs to know that stuff. So whoever creates your style guide for you needs to also understand all those color usages, how they apply, and what's appropriate. So color application and all the variations, you know, light colors and dark colors, reversed colors, and then all those different variations. It's super important that you get your colors spot on.
It sounds good. And if some of this seems a little over your head or things like that, that's okay. The creative people in your industry will be really happy to have all this information.
That's absolutely right.
Right.
Without it, in fact, you kind of flounder, and then they have no choice but to guess. And that's what they actually usually expect, because very few people have this kind of guidance. When you hand them the style guide, you'll actually get this kind of look, like a breath of fresh air. It just washes over them. Oh, thank you so much.
Right, exactly. And yeah, and the same thing kind of goes for fonts. Like we were talking about colors. You have to think about the different fonts that you're using, just like the colors. They will support your brand and help you with that messaging that you're looking for. So when you pick your font faces, you have to define them just like your colors. And then you have rules for how you use fonts for headers, body content, call-outs, footers and footnotes, other things, all kinds of things that you're going to be using content for and words. You have to think about the fonts that you're going to be using. and the variations. If you're going to use all caps or leading caps or italics or not italics or things like that, just all kinds of rules as far as your fonts go with all the different content that you're going to be producing. And also, and color, exactly.
Yeah, combine those two together. You know what? If you are going to use a bold Garamond serif font for a header, well, is it black or is it blue? Is it, you know, is it a pan color? What's the color? You know, so all these things do combine with each other, and it's all defined here in these sections. So this, I think those two sections, the color and the fonts, are the thing that the designers really appreciate the most, because they just don't have to guess on that stuff anymore, right?
Absolutely.
Well, I think the next section is taglines, and because you're the word girl, I'll let you cover that one too, Amy.
Sure. So, you know, we've talked about taglines before, and if you want more information on taglines, you can go back to a previous episode where we talked all about them and how to create them and what makes a good tagline and things like that. So in your style guide, once your tagline is defined, you need to tell people how to use it. So there's do's and don'ts of display. Does it always show up with your logo? Can it be used without your logo? The fonts to use, the acceptable colors, just all kinds of things with your tagline.
Right.
So,
and, you know, we're going to be talking about images here, and we're going to talk about the logo next. I'll jump in on that next. But you said that sometimes the tagline appears with the logo and sometimes it doesn't. Again, combine these two sections together. If you're trying to figure out what the right way is to display the logo and the taglines coming along with it, then those same rules apply.
Right. So, for instance, does the tagline... does it appear under the logo or to the right of the logo, or does it matter? Or do you want to have a hard and fast rule about that? All kinds of things like that.
Exactly right. So, and this is where you're now starting to get the feel, wow, this really sounds like a lot of stuff. Man, do I really need all this? Well, you don't need it, but the designers do, the creative people do. So again, it's this deep appreciation for helping them do their job well. So let's go to the logo. The logos, similar to taglines, there are the do's and don'ts, the rules of how you properly display it. For example, let's say you want to have this really hyper-visual web presentation and the logo is going to go in the upper left-hand corner. Well, does the logo go over the photo, or do I have to put it inside of a box so that it's inside of a white field or a black field or some colored field? Is putting it over a photo acceptable? And you need to decide that in advance. And if you don't decide that, then the creative people are just going to assume that they can do that. Is there a certain specified padding or margin around the logo? And this is where you really start to get into the details of design, where let's say I have a logo that has leading caps. You know, it has a capital A and then it has a whole series of lowercase letters. What I might do in the style guide is I might say, okay, the height of the first lowercase letter, I'm going to call that one unit. And if I have that defined as one unit, then I want one unit of padding above the logo, to the right, to the left, and at the bottom. Or I might want to have two units of padding to the left. Now, the reason we do these measurements in units is, if I scale it down, if I go, the logo for this presentation needs to be a little bit smaller, I can scale it down. Let's say it's 2/3 as big. Well, my units just shrunk as well, and I need to shrink the margins and the padding as well. So all these spacing issues of how the logo is used is really important, because you don't want your logo crammed up against another photo or overlapping something where it gets visually really confusing. Having clarity with how your logo is presented is super important.
Yeah, and the other thing too is if you're giving your logo to another organization to use to promote you, or say you're a sponsor for some event or something like that, and you don't like the way that they're displaying your logo, you can always say, well, you know, our style guide says that our logo has to be displayed this way. And right. It lends some kind, you know, lends a sense of authority and uniformity to how your logo is used.
That's right.
And also, I was just going to say, Kevin, sorry. So again, when we're talking about all these things, and if you're not really sure like what padding and margins mean or all these other kinds of things or units, that's okay. You don't have to know everything, but go to your creative people. Go to the people that you use and say, hey, what do you think we should put in our style guide for our logo use, and like work on it together and make them part of the decision-making process.
or better yet, just have them do it. They can consult with you and say, okay, well, you know, let me do a draft of a fake mock-up of like a web page or a brochure, and they can show you what the logo will look like, and it's easier to shoot at a target than it is to create something from scratch, right? So they show you this mock-up, and you go, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, it's a little bit dark, though. That's, you know, maybe that's a little too crowded. Well, now you're giving them the input that they need, and then they take the information from that consulting and they put it into your style guide, which, you know, and they'll interpret it and put it into the lingo and jargon that the other creative people need.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. So the next thing inside the logo section are what versions of our logo. And this is amazing to me. Not amazing. It's not amazing at all, but it is... The depth of the issue is a little surprising to me. A lot of companies have this belief that they have their logo, as if it is a fixed, defined, single thing, a single entity, and it never varies. Well, a well-thought-out logo design needs to have flexibility and allows variations. So your style guide defines that. So let's, you know, when was the last time, Amy, that you ever sent out a fax, an actual facsimile?
Years,
right? Mm-hmm. But is there still a reason why people need a black and white version of their logo? That was the reason why we needed it 10 years ago, because if you're going to send a fax to someone, you don't want your full color logo to come through as a black blob, right? So you make a black and white version of your logo, and now it looks so good on a fax machine. Well, there's a lot of reasons for all of these things, but a black and white version is a very important variation of your logo, and you have all these other variations as well, two color, duotone colors, full colors, whether it's for print or for digital. You have a reversed logo. So sometimes you'll have a full color version that really isn't appropriate in a presentation. So you need to say, well, what if I have just my white version and I place it over that photo? Or if it's a light photo, I might say I have a black version of my logo that goes over that logo or over that photo. Or I might have a stripped down version where I alternate colors inside the logo so that I can put it over a light versus a dark photo. So there's all these variations of whether it's three-dimensional, whether it's a super horizontal logo that can go on a ballpoint pen, or it's a square logo that I can use inside of a profile picture on a social media platform. You have to think about all these things, define them, and put all of those rules into your style guide. Makes sense, doesn't it?
Does. Yeah.
Yep. So the last thing inside of a style guide, and that's the last thing, I think it's one of the things that's overlooked the most, is let's say we've kind of ripped through this pretty quickly in all of these. It sounds like there's a lot of details, and when you actually start defining all of these logos and colors and font variations and all that stuff, you'll easily get up to 8 or 10 pages with just what we've talked about. And a large company who has lots of rules, that might be 20 or 30 pages. For a small company, it might only be a couple of pages. But the thing that a lot of people miss is having their style guide become a living document. And I think for the creative people especially, and I've heard this over and over and over from my own creative employees, is the more input you can give me, the better. So what we do with ours is we put it into a binder, not a spiral bound or fixed bound document. We'll put it into a binder so that you can add things to it and take things out as needed. And the thing that we add the most often are other examples of creative pieces that are exemplary of our identity. So let's say we start out with a brand new style guide. I'm going to want to print out the homepage of the website, because that certainly is going to be a major visual piece in my brand, right? And I'm going to have lots of business documents, business cards and letterhead and stationery. I don't actually have to put those physical items in there. I can, you know, have the design drafts put in there, envelopes and invoices, anything you can possibly imagine that's in your business that you've created that matches and follows the guidelines in the style guide. the visual people, when they look at this stuff, will go, oh, I see what they did there. Look at how they did the logo. Oh, I see what they mean about this certain color over this certain, you know, background. That's interesting. It gives them the visual input that they're really looking for.
Yeah, I think this is a really great exercise, too. This is something that we have our employees do oftentimes when we're helping them rebrand or tighten up their brand, is that we do take all these kinds of things, like you said, business cards, letterhead, stationery, that they've used over the years, and have them lay them out on a big table and look at them. And if you haven't been through a brand or rebranding or this kind of exercise before, what often happens, especially if companies have been in business for a long time, is that they look at all their stuff and it doesn't match. It's not cohesive. They've gone through different things. They've used different versions of their logo. And so it's very interesting to see that. But once you take all those documents and you put it in this binder and you've got your brand focus, then you can flip through and see everything matches. Everything looks the same. It's all, you can tell it comes from the same company. And it's a really great thing to see from, especially from a brand perspective.
Right, really tight presentation. So other documents would be all your marketing documents, your brochures. I would print out banner ads, the backgrounds and the skins and the profile and cover images of your social media stuff, how you've presented advertisements in the past, you know, like for Facebook or Google Ads or Twitter. All the other miscellaneous documents that your company might come across over the years as well. You know, if you had a trade show booth design, or you created a DVD for some seminar or workbooks, or you created an audio CD, or marketing companies will have, or product companies will have, things that are called sell sheets. You know, like a single sheet that describes a product. I mean, there's dozens and dozens and dozens of different kinds of documents. And I'm not saying that a company should dump everything that they've ever produced in there. These are the cream of the crop. These are the really well-crafted. They do an awesome job of presenting as a whole. They fit in with your company's brand and your identity and the approach that you want to take. And they are the pick of the litter, so to speak. Right?
Sounds good. So if your company doesn't have a current style guide, or you need to update your style guide, we hope that this podcast provides you some information of things that you might be missing or want to add to your style guide. And if you need help getting started, starting a style guide, we'd be more than happy to talk to you about that.
Absolutely. So looking forward to content next week, and thanks for your time today, Amy.
Yep. Have a great week, Kevin.
You as well. Bye.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.